Well, I'm delighted to be here. I travelled in from Copenhagen the other day. That's my new home, after having lived in a couple of different countries before. I just want to go very, very briefly through where I've been. Yes, we have an update. I'm a graduate of Cornell University, and I'm sitting on the Cornell Quarterly editorial board. And that is a real delight to sit on that board, because you get to read all the papers that needs to go through before they actually go through. But it's all only around talent and culture. So that is a great hobby that I have. The last role I had was with Mövenpick Hotels and Resorts, and there I headed up HR as a management team member of the company, which was based in Zurich. And prior to that, I was with Contract Catering with Group Elior, and that was the UK-based business based out of London. Was back in hotels before, based in London, with Le Méridien. And with Le Méridien, I was heading up HR and customer experience quality for the European hotels. And then at the end of my role there, I handed over Le Méridien as a brand into the Starwood machine in Brussels, and then I moved on. I've been a consultant with KPMG Consulting, and there I did, outside of hospitality, I did mergers and acquisitions, and very much around change and transformation and culture at the time, how it was at that time. And I come originally from the Residor Group, where I was based in Brussels, looking after learning and development and early stages of HR when the company was 25 hotels, and I think it's today about 700 hotels or something like that. So that's a little bit on my background, what I've done. So right now, what am I doing? I'm actually in between jobs, which means it's a luxury place to be. I resigned from my last role, moved to Denmark. Haven't lived in Scandinavia for 20 years, and it was great to actually come back, spend time with the kids, start reading, and I can tell you what a trouble it is and challenge it is to put together a few slides when you have so much time reading. It's really hard. It's really hard. And you want this in and that in, and you're actually not representing a company, but it's some thoughts that I wanted to share. And I'm basing that thought on where I've been, what my journey has been. So I hope in that respect that I'm representing employers in hospitality, whether that is contract catering or hotels. But also I've spent a lot of time with universities and with students. So I hope that there's a kind of a balanced view of it. So the topics is about, there is a lot of change. There is a lot of contextual change that is happening. And what's actually the impact on our industry? We looked at it with some students yesterday, and I find it interesting to look at what is the impact of TripAdvisor, what is the impact of Uber, what is the impact of Twitter, etc., etc. We're just bringing that up to the front mind of the students' mind so that they are aware what's going on and what is the impact actually having on our industry. I believe everything that Jane was talking about around culture, about the talent proposition, about really being real and believable as an employer, that's what it's all about. It's all about culture, it's all about purpose, it's all about what you join and what you actually leave. What I wanted to talk about there is staying relevant and believable. That's all about that culture and strategy and talent proposal or talent idea of that organization being all aligned and together. I want to share some examples that I have looked at outside of hospitality where they have aligned the brand, the strategy, and the culture really well. And also, my final question is the industry and the graduates, are we aligned on our expectations? And that is also very much referring back to the baby boomers X, Y, and Z, but also the whole psychographic ideas of attitudes, inspirations, and so on, which I think is far more coming up now in people's minds, that it's not as much generationally driven, but the more global we become, we have so many inputs and impact from so many different places in the world, where we have lived, how our upbringing was, what we've been exposed to, which school we went to, and many people are now on their eighth country. I'm on my seventh country and my third continent to live. This worries me. This is some recent study of a Cornell Hotel School. And this is where, the question is, where are the graduates 2 years after graduation? So where are the graduates 2 years after graduation? 28% are in hotels, 8% are in restaurants. The rest are not in our industry. So where have they gone? lot are going into education, either as educators or actually taking their next degree and so on and so forth. So that's other. Other businesses would be anything that doesn't fit into the others, of course. But this could also be non-profit, for instance, non-profit organization. Consulting, 11%. Financial services, 11%. And real estate, 10%. I find this quite a challenge for the industry as such, and also for all the students that are actually investing a lot of money into a degree. And then why do they leave us? We need to understand that properly. This is a worrying slide, but it's actually a factual. It's factual. This is where we are. Just as I believe in everything that Jane was talking about, I also want to refer to the service profit chain. The service profit chain, to me, is an absolute basis for our industry. It starts with the engaged employees. Without engaged employees, you don't have a superior service delivery. You do not deliver an engaged experience to customers. Customers are not going to come back, and they are certainly not going to be raving fans and loyal and return to the establishment. And only the satisfied and loyal customers are actually then coming back, and they are, of course, much cheaper to maintain, so to speak. They are spending between 25 to 80% more in our hotels and restaurants than a guest who is there for the first time. So the basis is the service profit chain. This is nothing new. It's a Harvard Business School model, but I believe that it is as valid as it's ever been. The question about change and the context, what is actually the impact here? What is the impact of Yelp? What is Yelp? Do you know what Yelp is? Yellow Pages? Add some social media to that. So, for instance, I went in online last night. I have a crashed iPhone glass. Where do I repair it in Sheffield? Where do I repair it in London? Not only do you have a listing of actually where you repair it, but all the customers that have gone into that establishment are saying, Bob, who is repairing that, was great. We thought it was going to take an hour. It took 20 minutes. 40% cheaper than going to the Apple store, et cetera, et cetera. For restaurants, for hotels, for other service institutions and small service shops that are not visible because they don't have a brand behind them, this is massive. TripAdvisor, we all know it, and it has a massive impact. But what is the impact for our industry? How do we manage that? I remember sitting in a management team meeting when TripAdvisor was fairly young. And at that time, the general managers, they said, oh, we surely have to manage this feedback that is coming in. So if I get two negative comments, I'm going to fabricate three positives so that it's at least it's kind of balanced. And we said, no, we can't do that. But in the general manager's mind, that was actually something that was discussed. And of course, that has an impact. Now many hotel companies are actually referring to TripAdvisor as the source. If you want to have a look at some customer feedback, why don't you go to TripAdvisor? Facebook, we talked about before, we all know how immediate that is. Airbnb, how many have heard of Airbnb? Airbnb is basically an online portal. If I live in London, I have a one-bedroom studio in Brussels. I'm not using my one-bedroom studio in Brussels for 4 days of the week. For those 4 days of the week, I want to rent it out. I put it on Airbnb. Airbnb runs all the administration, the credit card fees and all of that. They get a cleaning company in to clean my flat, and everyone is happy. It builds on the social media. So I, renting it out, I actually have a profile. And the people that are renting it from me have a profile. At the end of their stay, they need to give information about how was Henrik as a host. Was it clean? Was it as it was described? What does that mean to the 2, 3, 4, 5-star establishment hotels? There are some really cool properties listed here. Really, really cool properties. So have a look at that. How many knows of Uber? Uber. You know all these Lincoln town cars that are in New York City that are just standing outside of offices or in London as well and other major cities around the world? They have these limos with drivers that they are sitting for 3 hours. They need to be productive too. So those 3 hours that they are not working, they can say 1.5 hour, I am available to drive people between points. There is an application on your phone. You have to register and say who you are, so social media again. After the stay, your credit card is charged. you as a passenger are being evaluated and also the driver is being evaluated. Well, I think that there is a lot of stuff going on, but I think the students, they need to be aware of this. And it takes a lot of time to keep track on all of this. There's an enormous fast pace. Lady Gaga, she is an absolute superhero when it comes to utilizing social media. And we can learn a lot from her, okay? Here are another few observations. The retirement is not only about retirement age, but it's actually about the activity that these retirees, they're going to be working long beyond 70. And they can contribute because they're healthy and they have a lot of energy and knowledge to give and share. The whole coaching and mentoring of the retired people, that is an absolute... Sorry, retired people, it sounds terrible, but you know what I mean. That's because I'm Swedish, I get away with it. Okay, 29% of the 25 to 34-year-olds, they're boomerang kids. What does it mean? They live with mom and dad. They live with mom and dad. Could be financially, could also be, coming back to Jane's comments about the generations, it's quite convenient. It's quite convenient. Instant gratification, ability to have feedback, coaching, mentoring, what do you think, etc., etc. That is in the US. And also this is in the US. By 2020, 40% of the US workforce will freelance, interim, and temp. What does that mean to culture? What does that mean to loyalty, to belonging to a brand or belonging to something? I think that is really cool. And this is US labor statistics, which is providing that data. So I think what is important here is, yes, it's HR, but if the HR officer is not getting this and is not on the pulse, we are in trouble because they are not hiring for the future. And then it's not very sustainable. So my question here is whether it's about my future returning to a corporate role as an HR culture talent guy, or I am a student about to graduate, or I am a university, or I am a restaurant, we need to know for whom we exist and why. And there are basically three questions, and I share that with the students yesterday. I've also facilitated this in my own management team, working with my colleagues, with Mövenpick, and also with another organization, and I said, these three questions. Who is our most important customer? And if that is the customer, the most important customer, what are those customers' most important goals? And because of that, what are they hiring us to do? We spent about 4 hours on this question alone as a management team with Mövenpick. They wouldn't mind me sharing that, but someone said, well, the most important customer is obviously the shareholder. No. It's obviously the employee. No. It's obviously the general manager. It's obviously the customer. Oh, that's an interesting idea. It actually took 4 hours, and then a management team of 7 people had 6 different opinions. If we as a management team are not united around who is the most important customer, thus, what is the most important goal of that customer, and therefore, what are they hiring us to do, then I think we are in trouble further down the line, and the employees needs that clarity in order to really be able to be engaged, to deliver, etc. So to stay believable, as I see it, we need to align the brand, the strategy, and the culture. The brand in here, to me, is all about what are we in the business of doing? So answering the three questions on the previous slide. So what are we in the business of doing? What are we all about? What is the service concepts that we have? What do we provide? What's our philosophy around X, Y, and Z? Once we have that, there needs to be a vision, and that needs to be a vision that comes from pretty high up in the organization. It needs to be the one person who is actually calling the ultimate decision in the company, needs to say, this is my vision for this organization, based on what we did here, okay? Once we have clarity there, it's not our vision as a management team. It's my vision as the chief exec, or it's my vision as the chairman of the board. It needs to be like that. Everything else can follow. And then you spend time on the values. When you spend time on the values, you need to have that as a collaboration with the business. People have been in the business for 20 years. It's not going to listen to someone like me who's been in the business for 3 months. It's not going to listen to a facilitator from the outside who's been asked to come and facilitate this workshop. The facilitator is there to facilitate. But the people who have been in the business, they know the value of the organization. Once you know the value of the organization, then you can start sketching out the behaviors. So if we value quality, what does that mean to the behaviors that we have to the customers and also within the organization, so internally to employees? What does that mean? If we value trust, what does that mean in behavior? Okay, so the vision, the values, the behaviors, and that will then needs to be, these are the key objectives. I also believe in three. I think it's simple, it's easy for people to remember. There is one vision, 3 to 4 values, 3 to 4 behaviors. There are 3 to 4 objectives. What we did within a previous organization was actually to use this model. And what we said was, this is KPIs that is plugged into the performance management system. That is also plugged into the performance management that you need to behave the values, you need to live the values in the organization. So that was measured, and that was incentivized. You were also put forward in the organization based on how you did with these three. We also hired and did succession planning based on these three. So it's aligned. It's linked. People know what it takes to be successful and what it. Why would I be exited? So a question that came yesterday was actually, so if someone is delivering on the hard objectives but is not living the values or the behaviors, what do you do? And the example that we had just launched it in the organization that I was with. We had just launched this model. And then we had someone quite high up in the business, actually sitting in Dubai, that was delivering on all of that. But the people working for him didn't see any of that and didn't see any of that. His sponsor was sitting on the management team, and he said, I want to promote this guy. So it was actually then down to two people. It was the chief exec, and it was down to the HR guy, who happened to be me, to actually have a dialogue and understand if the person delivers on that but not on that and that, is that okay? And we made the decision that we're going to ask him to leave. And the organization, what that told the organization was, this is not fluff, we're serious about it. After that, performance evaluation started to be done. People started to recruit according to that. And actually it became very, very much alive. Had we not done that, I would say that it would have been a waste to even show this model in that organization. The global financial crisis happened. We did 10% of reduction of staff. That is a terrible, it's a difficult thing to do for everyone. But if we could point at the vision, this is where we are going. These are the values, this is how we do it, and these are the objectives. And we are not even clear of reaching our goals and objectives. That is quite interesting. So the application of that model works. Okay. This is a busy slide. I think that when you align brand strategy and culture, you get what Apple have done. You may not like Apple, but if you go into an Apple store, I think that there is a huge difference between an Apple store and solution-drivenness of an Apple store than many other retail stores that are around. If that is, I think it's Curry or PC World, etc. It is more fun to be in here. And actually on the website, they are indicating the following three headlines. Shop your way, learn all you want, get the help you need. It's very solutions-driven. And you can only do that if they understand the vision, if they have the values and they live the behaviors. I think what is interesting to follow is what BA is doing, going back to fly to serve. That is an interesting one, from the world's favorite airline to fly to serve. Let's see how that works. But it's a really interesting one to follow. I want to show a video of this one, but it takes, 2 minutes. Do we have 2 minutes for that? Yeah, so 2 minutes. So it's actually, have you been to the Audi showroom on Piccadilly opposite the Ritz in London?
He knows the word I'm searching for.
Okay, okay. So what this is, it's actually a showroom. You have to see it. It's a showroom. Everything is digital. So basically you have three huge screens on the wall where a car can be projected. Okay, so the car can be projected right there. You have a huge iPad where you're swirling and adding an engine and diesel, and you push the engine to start the engine, and you hear the diesel engine. So you can see, you can play with the colors and so on. The beauty of this is that they have 20 employees. They have one car in the showroom. They are one of the highest, what are they called? They sell most cars in the UK, one of the top performers with Audi. They have one car. So they sell it completely digitally, which I think is pretty cool. The customer who goes in there maneuver the car by walking on the floor in different ways, and you interact with the car that is on the floor on the screen. Final point, and I think that is very important. Out of the 20 employees, one person has worked with cars before. Where do the other people come from? Hospitality, retail, luxury retail, restaurants. You know, I think it's fantastic. That is an opportunity, but. What do we do in hospitality, in hotels, when we try to upsell a room? We may try to say, well, this comes with an extra coffee boiler, and it comes with the bed is 20 centimeters wider, and it has an... If customers are used to this, that is not a way of upselling and engaging with the customer. 20 employees, one employee has sold a car before, worked with cars before. This is an opportunity for us in this industry. So we can look at that. Maybe we look at that at the very end. So my question here is really that I believe if I look back at what I've done before, I would love to, I would be able to summarize what we expect. We expect students and graduates to do some hard work. We also expect you to come with industry knowledge. So if we say, have you seen the new Hilton concept or the Marriott launched? Yesterday it was announced that they launched a new brand together with IKEA. Let's talk about that. And if students are then looking down and saying, well, I don't really know about that, that is not on. We need to be on. And I need to be on being an employer in the industry and understanding what the students are talking about Lady Gaga. If I don't get that, if I don't understand what One Direction is all about, if I don't understand how Generation Y and Z actually expect feedback in a completely different way, I am not cool. So it's a two-way street. Industry knowledge, we want you to have leadership experience. That's a tough one. And that, I think, would be lovely to discuss maybe over lunch and saying, how do we actually get that to happen? We ask you to come and be very technology and commercially savvy. We need you to understand profit and loss. We need you to understand flow through. We need you to understand what balance sheet is all about. But we also ask you for help with technology. Languages, you need to speak more than English. You need to speak more than French. You need to speak more than Swedish in order to get around, because it is very mobile. Great communicators, both in writing and in verbally, and be very flexible and very self-driven. I'm going to post a list. What I think, and please, you know, students, graduates, alumni, if you feel this is wrong, then I think it's important to raise. Collaboration, flexibility, project work, access to anyone, anytime. If I wasn't in my office, a graduate that I was working with would go into the president and ask the same question and say, well, Henrik wasn't there. Never mind, he was president of 14,000 people. That, didn't bother her. I need an answer to the question, otherwise I'm stuck. And that's healthy, but we need to be able to understand that. Mentoring and coaching, huge opportunity, especially when we talk about the people who have left active employment at this point of time, and also feedback. And Jane was referring to feedback a lot. And anything that I've forgotten there, particularly from students? No? Okay. Let's continue over lunch to talk about that. So the opportunities that I see is educators, industry, we who are really passionate about talent and really passionate about the industry, we need to ask the question, how are we doing? We need to co-create programs and graduate development programs. We need to ask the students what they are looking for, but we also need to say very clearly what we as industry are looking for. So there needs to be that collaboration and co-creation. Co-facilitation of courses, I think, is a beautiful opportunity where industry is coming together with academics to co-facilitate a course, making it very relevant and for both parties, or for all three parties. Consultancy project and also an international student conference that is hosted, I think, would be great. I want to end with a quote, which is from someone who runs the Gilt Group. The Gilt Group, they're basically selling luxury apparel, luxury clothes at 60% of the price, but it's only online and it's a super service level. So they do it online but on super service level. No matter how good your business is today, some entrepreneur is working hard to disrupt it. And I think that is a pretty cool quote. Should we see the audio video? Yeah? Okay, great. So what you will see is customers entering the showroom, you will see that in order to understand the color scheme and so on, you're given actually real color samples to feel and touch, because the color is very often not exactly the same on a screen as it is on really feeling it. The same with leather. If you want to select the leather interior, I'm not an I've never owned an Audi, so I'm not working for them either. But you can see the stitching and all of those things. But it's a pretty cool thing. Okay, so that's what I wanted to share as a perhaps an inspiration to what HR needs to be about in the future in order to be sustainable, and the cooperation between industry and students and educators. Yeah. All right. Thanks.
Okay. Right then, just whilst we 2 minutes, just wanted to get everybody sorted out. And do you want to?